This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz. This program is sponsored by New Zealand Bridge, sponsors of Grassroots Bridge across the nation.
Welcome to The Bridge Zone. You're at the table with Barry and Mariana, and today we are coming from Paddy. I'm actually 15 minutes away from Paris, Barry. We're staying in Rosenvoy Sodera.
So when you say we, I'm in Te Kauwhai.
We. It's at 7 o'clock here in the morning. Looks like to be a lovely day. It's been pretty hot. Off to the Eiffel Tower this afternoon.
Oh, that'll be exciting. Mm. Are you going to go all the way to the top?
Yep. So what's the goss over your way?
Oh, there's a bit of bridge on the weekend. There are a few tournaments. The Christchurch midwinter team was all girl power. Jan Alabaster, Jane Lennon, Shirley Newton and Jenny Wilkinson.
Nice.
Won the midwinter teams. Havelock North had a 5A Swiss pairs. That was won by Julian Herbert and Jane O'Brien from Stephen Franks and Amanda Matthews.
Ah, okay.
There was the Matamata Open 5A pairs won by Blair Fisher and Russell Wilson from Yuzhong Chen and Herman Wan.
Right. Doesn't Bailiff normally play with Russell Wilson in that tournament?
No,
or does
no.
he normally play with Grant Jarvis?
It's a long-standing engagement between Blair Fisher and Russell Wilson, who travels up from New Plymouth every year to play in it.
Ah, I see. Well done, yeah, you two.
Then on the Sunday, there was an online tournament at the Wellington Bridge Club. They had 30 tables. So a bit telling, 12 tables at Matamata face-to-face and 30 in the Wellington online. They had a north-south and an east-west winner. So the winners north-south were Liz and Blair Fisher from Bill Humphrey and David O'Shaughnessy. East-west, Graham Wakefield and Mark Robertson beat Russell Dive and Russell Wilson. Back in the money again.
Okay.
So that was about it. Plenty of bridge being played on the weekend, if you were keen.
I see one of my favourite tournaments is coming up this weekend, the Morrinsville Junior Restricted. I normally take my class of beginners across. Alas, can't do that. So hopefully all you juniors that are listening from Hamilton Club, enter in and go across. Nick would be only too pleased to see you.
Let's have a look. See how many entries they've got for the Morrinsville Junior Restricted. Looks like they've got 4.5 tables at the moment. So I'm sure they would love another table or two. They've got people from Morrinsville, Waikato, Matamata, Te Araha, everywhere but Hamilton, Mariana.
Well, you better yell out to the troops.
Looks like the numbers are sneaking up. Mm-hmm. There's a few open players playing with beginners.
That's good. The Westerns are going to go trip across. I know that much. There should be some others. I did mention it before I left.
I guess people are starting to think that Congress is getting a bit closer now. It's going to be August this week. Congress will be following month.
Blimey, it goes quickly, doesn't it? Hey, I've got a story for you.
Go on.
I wasn't able to play any bridge. I just couldn't find the 3.5 hours or 3 hours needed to get to Waterloo to arrange a game with Richard Stewart. But we went up to the Shard. So the Shard is the tallest building in London. And we're on the 72nd floor, and it's actually open. So at the very tip of the Shard, you'll see the unbroken bits, which is meant to be the pieces of glass. Well, that's actually open, and you can walk around that bit. So the wind's blowing in your hair and everything. It's pretty windy out there, and you can feel the building moving a little bit. Well, we bumped into this guy that was a London expert. His name was Michael. And this other expert walks past, and his name was Zia. So I tapped him on the shoulder, and I said, "G'day, how are you?" And he says, "Oh, I'm really good, rah, rah, rah." And Michael was giving him a bit of stick. And I said, "You wouldn't happen to play bridge, would you?" And he said, "Yes, I do." So guess what? We were just talking about a second person called Zia, who plays bridge. He was a young chap. He said he was 28, and all he does is walk around the Shard and talk about London.
Has he heard of Zia the bridge player?
Yes, he has.
Oh, okay.
I said, have you heard of the other Zia? And he said, "Yeah, I often get mistaken for him." And I was like, right, sure.
He's probably about 50 years younger.
Yeah, he's very young. That was a cool story. I met Zia.
There can't be too many of them.
No, that's a bit of a hard case.
So the New Zealand Bridge site at the moment is asking for a they're advertising for a coordinator role for teaching and learning resources.
Yeah, I was reading that. It's something that I'm sort of interested in, but I can't meet their deadline. So that's a bit of a shame. It is interesting, and it's great that NZ Bridge are looking at refreshing all of the resources that we do with our beginners, because it is a bit long and winded. I'm pretty sure the person that can make all those deadlines would get their teeth in it. They've really got only a short period, haven't they, before everything has to be rolled out in January.
Yeah, that's right. It'll come up quicker than they think.
3 months is a pretty short time to get all that material done.
It is. And if we do run another session of beginners classes at the Hamilton Bridge Club, you never know, there
It
might be
could
something
be.
available.
That's right. Well, our next lesson are set to go, I think, late September. And we'll be doing that probably on a Sunday. Try and capture
Yeah.
people that have got some spare time that can't make the evening or the day trip. So we're looking to roll it out. But it was mildly successful last year.
Was.
Tell me anything exciting happening on your trip to Argentina?
Well, the Trans-Tasman Challenge, which has been going on for some time now between New Zealand and Australia, which is a bit of practice for all the international teams, there was another heat of it held on Friday night. So New Zealand are still comfortably ahead of Australia. The scores are 442 to 357. That's VPs. Leading by, oh, how many is that? That's about 85 VPs. That's quite an interesting little thing. And of course, people can kibitz. It's held sort of a roughly once a month on a Friday night.
Yeah.
Manage your win over the Australian seniors team.
So who's in your team?
It's Patrick and Julie. Judge Julian Bailiff and Jenny and I and Kate Davies and John Patterson.
Okay.
Who have been generously letting us play quite a lot because they say they want to see us succeed in Argentina. So I hope that works for them.
Isn't it meant to be works for you? Talking about Argentina, has the draw been out yet?
No, nothing like that.
Okay, when would you expect to see that?
Oh, God, I don't know. We've had a couple of emails from the Schefter Mission, but no mention of that. All the international players are going to get some money from the Matariki distribution.
Oh, okay, cool.
I don't know whether there's any reason why I can't say how much it is. It's just a touch under $300 each. That'll help a bit.
Yeah, anything is better than nothing.
It is, because everything's pretty expensive. Actually, one of the things, I guess this is sort of bridge related, or it's Argentina related, is Jonathan Westerby, our Schefter Mission, gave us a quick story about inflation in Argentina. They've recently printed a 10,000 peso note,
Oh,
10,000 pesos, which is currently worth about 17 New Zealand dollars.
17.
Yep, about 9 years ago, 10,000 pesos is worth 450 New Zealand dollars. So
Wow.
he's advising the players that inflation is rife, which you may well be dealing with, is why you may well be dealing more in US dollars than pesos. If you've got some pesos, spend it quickly as it may be worth less the next day, he says.
Oh, funny.
While I was talking to you, another email came through to Jonathan to say that the amount that we're getting has been rounded up to $300. So there you go. Thank you, New Zealand Bridge, for the extra $1.25.
Okay, it's a fair amount though, because there's a lot of people traveling, isn't there?
There are a lot. And when you think there's four teams and there's six people in each team, that's 24 people times $300. That's $7,000.
A lot, isn't it?
Yeah, it adds up. Yeah, of course, they've got NPCs traveling as well and shift of mission. A lot of people to get over there to get accommodated, fed, watered, looked after.
Just talking about that, what would be your dream country to play against first round? What would be better for NZ mixed first round?
I guess you always like to get off to a good start.
Yeah.
So you probably don't want one of the big name teams in the first round just to sit down and play against them. On the other hand, if you're going to play them, maybe that's the time to play them when they're not quite warmed up. So last year, the USA mixed team won in Morocco. So maybe you should want to get that USA mixed team, get there before they,
Out of the way.
get them out of, well, no, get them before they, in the groove.
Director, please.
Judge Judy is in session. It's the bailiff today.
He is Patrick.
This week we have the bailiff.
Hello, Mariana.
So a couple of things, a little bit about Cycings. One of them is it illegal to open a strong two club bid and why?
Well, New Zealand Bridge Manual specifies some bids that you're not allowed to psych. Could be something else as well, but the one main ones are strong two clubs, multi two diamond, and a precision one club. You're not allowed to psych those bids because they don't have anchor suits and they just show strong hands. I presume whoever wrote the manual, or whoever wrote that part of the manual, just thought that it was unfair for someone to be psyching that bid when their partner couldn't get carried away. You know, like when you psych a spade, for instance, there's a danger that partner will bid too many spades. If you psych a strong bid that's just got a point count, partner can't leap off into the far blue yonder usually because you aren't showing a suit. So that's the reason I believe that the person who wrote the manual, or that section of the manual, decided that those three bids weren't allowed to be psyched. And also, you're not allowed to cite a strong response that doesn't show anything about the suits. For instance, if you play, say, a two-diamond open from partner, you're not allowed to psych a two-no-trump response to say that how strong are you. If your bid doesn't show any suits and just says, I've got 15-plus points, what have you got? You're not allowed to psych that. Or, for instance, when partner opens two hearts, showing a five-card heart suit or something, I've seen people psych a two-no-trump bid there. That would be illegal unless the two-no-trump bid actually shows hearts. If partner alerts and says it's asking me how much I've got, but it promises heart support, then you could psych it with weak values if you wanted to, if it promised heart support. If it's just a point count, an artificial inquiry, then the rules say you can't psych it. Psychs are an interesting part of the game. Once upon a time, back in the 1940s and 1950s, I think people psyched a lot. As it is now, I think people psych less often. Some people don't psych at all. Some people do psych a bit, have a bit of a reputation for it. I think I want my partner to trust my bids, so I don't really psych very much at all. But I want the opponents to not trust my bids because, you know, sometimes I'll bid a spade and I'll have five spades, but they'll have seven of them and they'll think I'm psyching and might bid four spades stupidly and get doubled by me. So I psych very, very rarely. But when I do psych, I tell everybody. I want the reputation, but I don't want to psych very much.
Yes, I guess so. If you're going to psych, you want to get your money's worth. The other question we had was about dealing the cards. I mean, these days, probably most clubs, I don't know, maybe there are clubs that don't have dealing machines or whatever these days. It doesn't seem that long ago to some of us that they dealt the cards by hand. Is there a prescribed way that you're meant to deal
I'm pretty sure. Well, it's a long time since I've looked at first few chapters of the laws, but I recall something about it being one at a time around the table. That's the normal way to deal it. You don't go three at a time like you do for 500. In theory, it shouldn't matter because the cards should be properly shuffled. But the problem is that people don't shuffle properly, and that, let's say you're playing your game at home. If you're putting the tricks together, then there's four diamonds together because someone played a diamond and everyone followed suit and someone picked up those four cards and put them in front of them. So there's clumps of cards that are together, right?
Right, yep.
And the same thing, even if you're playing at the club and you put them down in front of you, you often run four spades off at one time or four diamonds off at one time. So once again, you've got clumps of cards together. So if you don't shuffle well enough to break up those four cards, then when you deal them out one at a time, everyone's got one of that suit. Everyone starts with one diamond and one spade, and the odds of having a really distributional hand are lessened. When computer dealt cards came in, people thought, oh, that wasn't right because the hands were much more distributional than they were used to. And the reason they were used to flatter cards than normal is because people didn't shuffle very well. There's a good example from that, from Barry's club, Hamilton, where I used to be the club captain many, many moons ago, in something like 1982.
Yeah.
And the cards were back in those days prior to computer dealing. But then you'd come along and you'd deal the cards at on the first table and then write them up. That was fine. But it just so happened that being club captain, I talked to the club secretary over lunch. And while I was doing that, I would take all the cards out of the boards and play that night. And I would make sure that they were very well shuffled. Having done that at lunchtime, the boards were given out in the evening. People picked them out of the boards and shuffled them their own badly shuffled way. But they were already well shuffled, so it didn't matter. And then they dealt them. And the cards were much more distributional than they were used to, even though they were shuffling and dealing them themselves.
Yeah.
And it was all Patrick was fiddling with the cards at lunchtime. And all I was doing was making sure they were well shuffled.
Funny.
So if only every club had a Patrick Carter coming in at lunchtime to shuffle their cards.
If only they could be so lucky. People are used to computer dealt cards. But there was a thing back in the day, the cards that were dealt were generally much flatter than you see now because people just couldn't shuffle well. You've seen some people that shuffle just flopping a few cards backwards and forwards across the top. There's not many people that do the riffle shuffle like you see in a casino.
Yeah.
Some shuffles are terrible. If you had four diamonds together, the chances are those four diamonds are still together.
Yeah, well, of course, some bridge players are getting a bit older. Some of them have got arthritis, gout, whatever. It's probably difficult for them to shuffle with.
I do think most clubs use computer dealt cards now.
Yeah,
I can't recall the last tournament. What would be the last tournament you played, Barry, that didn't have computer dealt cards? I bet it starts with a one. Be something in the 1990s.
That sounds about right. Okay, well, very good. Thank you very much for that.
Okay, thank you very much. See you next, Julie will see you next week, presumably.
Okay.
Right, bye.
Cheerio. Here's Peter Holland with the last segment on
the non-serious three-no trumps. The next thing that I want to address is, what if you've agreed hearts? So let's say it goes one heart and it goes three hearts. What if you bid something below three no trumps? What if you bid, say, three spades? What's this? Well, some people use this as the replacement for three no trumps, but typically what I do is just have three spades be neither. We haven't done that yet. And now the responder can actually answer and bid three no trumps saying, hey, I'm just following on. I'm not actually that genuinely interested. I am not serious using three no trumps for that. Or if they then actually bypassed it and bid four clubs, they would say, hey, I've got a really good hand for my three heart bid. I've got genuine interest and I have first or second round control while doing that. So both people can actually use this and along the way actually describe whether they are good or not. So if whether you're the opener or the responder, it is viable to use it either way. I want to highlight some other situations where it's particularly useful in the 2-over-1 system. So let's say you're playing 2-over-1 and have an auction where partner bids a game force, and then maybe you bid two spades, and here partner bids three spades. So if two clubs was natural and forcing, you've repeated your spades and partner has agreed spades. We've found a fit at the three level. We are playing in spades at this stage. So in this spot, here, this is an area where the point ranges are very undefined. The responder has made a game forcing bid, and all they've done is just not bid four spades. There's a spot where fast arrival would apply. If they just bid four spades, it'd be absolutely minimum. But we don't actually know how interested South is in slam. Like, they could have like a 14 count that just said, hey, I've got a fit and want to cooperate and. Yeah. And also, North isn't that well defined. Maybe they're like 11 to 15. Some people put some more hand types in that as well. Both hands are very, very wide range. Yet we're in this game forcing auction. So how can we actually unwrap if you're actually interested in slam or if you are actually just following along? And this is where non-serious three no trumps comes in as well. So here, if the opener was just weak and just like a bit better than just absolutely signing off in four spades, but just wants to cooperate in case partner's strong, this is where they can bid three no trumps. It says, I'm not serious about slam. I'm not taking away all the space. I'm leaving room for you to cube it if you want to, but I'm highlighting that I'm not actually that serious. And now you've got the bids of, well, you could have just bid four spades to say you've got the worst of the worst. You've got the three no trumps to say, I'm not interested, but I'm leaving room to cooperate in case you have that really good hand. And then also you have just going and bidding four clubs, four diamonds, four hearts. All of these serious cue bids where you're saying, I'm genuinely interested in slam. I really like my hand for slam. And you can actually separate out these ranges really well. So this is why it's a really powerful slam bidding tool. It's great for narrowing that ranges and just giving you ways of not going past four of a major necessarily, but being able to describe how much you are actually looking for slam. Often people are caught in this middle zone where they've both got a few extras. No one's quite sure if they should go on or not, versus times where people are just cooperating and not actually trying to get to slam. This tool can help you untangle that and actually show your actual interaction. So when it applies is you've found a fit at the three level, or maybe you've done Jacobi two no trumps, but you're not jumping to three no trumps. So it's only for majors. You do not use it for minors because the minors will often want to be in three no trumps anyway. So majors only, you found your fit at the three level and you want to progress forward. So that's when I like to play non-serious three no trumps, allowing you to do serious cue bids, separate them out.
And we're heading into Barry's tip. Let's see what he's pulled out of his hat.
You know how I've talked before, not for a while actually, but I've talked before about balancing.
Mm-hmm.
You remember all we ever talked about balancing?
Oh, I'm going to say yes.
I have my doubts, but still. I mean, basically, you know, the premise of the thing is if it goes one heart, pass, two hearts, pass to you, nobody ever got a good board from passing two hearts out there. The opponents are exactly where they want to be. You're probably not going to be able to beat it. If you can beat it, you probably could have made something your way. So what it basically comes down to is that you can act because you're in what they call the balancing seat, which is, you know, if you pass, it's all over. They're in their dream contract of two hearts, which is exactly where they want to be. So you need to double or bid something that you wouldn't normally do with maybe a few points less than you normally had. This is the one where you borrow a king from your partner's hand. Remember the one?
Yeah,
I think that might have been one of the very first programs of the Bridge Zone. Anyway, balancing is not what I want to talk to you about.
Okay, so you don't want to talk to me about balancing, so what do you want to talk to me about?
But I had to talk to you about balancing to get on to my subject of what I want to talk about next, which is called pre-balancing.
Pre-balancing. Never heard of it.
I knew you were just going to love it.
A Barry Jones special, is it?
No, it's not a Barry Jones special, but it's pre-balancing. So it's when the bidding goes one heart, pass, two hearts,
mm-hmm.
and you haven't really got enough to act, but you've got a shortage in hearts, and you know it's going to be really difficult for partner to balance because they've probably got too many hearts.
Right.
So you're sitting there with only one heart, and you've got four spades, four diamonds, and four clubs or something like that, but only about 8 or 9 points. Pre-balancing is usually, it's easier for the person who has a shortage in the opponent's suit to act than the person who hasn't got a shortage. So even though you're not in the balancing seat, it hasn't gone pass to you, you're thinking it quite likely will, you should double here, even though you haven't got as much as partner might normally expect you to have.
Ah, okay, yep.
So what you need to remember here is that you double, and if partner ends up declaring, you put down this dummy with 9 points in it, and they look at it disparagingly, all you need to say is, partner, I was pre-balancing, and you'll be fine.
And that will wash away your sins.
Anyway, if you believe that, you'll believe anything. But anyway, so there you go. That's pre-balancing for you. Give it a go. Even if you're a Waterloo, it'll probably work there. Either that or it'll be your Waterloo.
Yeah. Hey, talking about a loo, when we're up in the Shard, when you do go to the restroom or to the bathroom, it's actually a loo with a view because it's all open and you can see all of London out the side of the window. Not as good as down in Cromwell. There's a racetrack down there. Their loos with a view are amazing.
Soon you get back from this trip and you start talking about bridge on the show rather than loos and shards and views and Eiffel Towers, the better our listeners are going to like it. Oh, yeah, it's still a while, isn't it? It's
still a while. Coming up next week, I'm going to share with you news about the youngest world champion. He is 10 years, 5 months, and 18 days old. How about that? And that lad was in a team with a 14-year-old, two 12-year-olds, and there he was at 10. And he is now the youngest world champion that Bridge has ever seen. We'll also let you know who took out the spin gold for 2024. That's a tournament that we often cover. That's about it from us this week, listeners. Catch you at the tables when I get back. Hope you have fun.
Bye for now.
New Zealand Bridge, sponsoring bridge from beginner to international nationwide. This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.